Calling together the eWeb board meeting here on January 7th. And we will start with a quick agenda check. Welcome everyone. Happy New Year. And yeah, agenda check. Any changes?
Nothing for me.
All right. Moving right along. Let's start down at this end with Mindy. Items from the board.
So it has been a quiet month, but today, Commissioner Mattal and I and General Manager met with the City of Eugene for our second meeting where we can kind of collaborate and work together on some of our goals, specifically working on some of our climate goals. So hopefully in the next few months, our next meeting is in 3 months, I think, there might be some potential pilot projects that we can collaborate on together, which I think would be really great. And then the other thing I just wanted to say is I really appreciate the monthly update newsletters that we're now getting part of. Maybe I got it in my regular email before and never paid attention, but when I get it to my eWeb email, I pay attention to it. And I think that they're really well done, and I'm not sure who's responsible for them or how that came about, but I really appreciate them, and I am often super interested on many of the little articles there and click on them, and then leads me deeper into the website and find much more information. So thank you for that.
Okay, I just have one thing to report, and that's that earlier in December, after our last board meeting, I had the opportunity to meet with John Borowski, who is here tonight. He's filed to run for election for the position that I currently hold and will be vacating about this time next year. And so, John, welcome. And we had a chance to talk about his background and experience. John's a local business person with an ownership share in a couple of restaurants here in town, and has lots of experience working with the chamber and also with the City of Eugene on the Planning Commission and the Budget Committee. So welcome, John. I look forward to supporting you in your campaign.
Okay. And I just wanted to let everyone know that I attended the Lane Council of Governments meeting this last December. The regular board meets quarterly, and I brought the comprehensive annual financial report that I thought I would pass around in case anybody wanted to peruse it while we were here. So I'll start this way, and then when it comes back, I'll send it that direction. That's all I have.
Well, welcome to everybody. Nice to see the group again. The gang's all here. It's January 2020, but nothing beyond that for me.
Thank you. I had several items. Number one, Mindy and Steve, when you continue to have your conversations with the city on things they can do, I got a statistic that I confirmed that there are more coal plants under construction in Asia that currently exist in the entire United States. And why we continue to feed the economy by purchasing all of those items through this organization and other organizations that feeds that, continual of the expansion of the coal industry is beyond me. But hopefully that topic can be brought up, because to me it's a no-brainer. The other couple things, I supported an email that I got from the people in up the McKenzie River with the Interpretive Center, and they reached out to me because I've got some relationships with the guides and things, and I think they want to have a dialogue with us about how we can be involved in that interpreting center, and maybe they want to get on the agenda and give us a presentation. So I'm bringing that to your attention. I'm making part of the public record, and I just told them that, you know, they can use me as a conduit, but there's five of us and a general manager, so we have to go through the process to get on the agenda and see if we want to have that discussion. Other thing is about downtown. Lately, you know, I've got an office downtown there. I've been there 30, 40 years, and eWeb's been down there doing a lot of work lately, and a lot of people have been barking about it. But I'll tell you what, the difference between eWeb's operations, traffic control, you know, protecting the environment, doing it right, versus what I've been witnessing the last week between a telecommunications company, it's a joke and it's a disaster. Thank you very much for doing it the right way. It's a disruption of traffic, but you guys, eWeb crews, are doing a magnificent job of making it tolerable. The other organizations, really, I mean, it's just night and day. And so thank you very much for doing a really good job. I appreciate it.
Okay, and then Frank.
Well, welcome to 2020. I would add to that, John, I was really frustrated yesterday when I was trying to go between Roosevelt and headquarters, merging, and then I get up there and it was an E-Web truck. So I was much more forgiving at that point. There's a couple of quick thank yous. Carmen Smith came online, came back online about a month ago, and then we had an issue with a potential transformer up there, and it was of a particular size that was difficult to get. And so thanks to Duke Energy back east, we were able to get one, and that's going in this week. And so Carmen Smith, as of Thursday or Friday, will be back up and running again. But it's just another example of how utilities, sometimes East Coast and West Coast, or California and Oregon, work together, whether it be equipment or personnel. And so we just wanted to thank them for their support and providing that equipment to us. I also wanted to mention that Karen Kelly was recently elected by the American Water Works Association as the Oregon and Idaho Regional Trustee. Apparently, she applied for that before she joined EWEB and got really busy with other things. So we'll see how she's going to balance that. But congratulations to Karen to represent utilities in that important role. So congratulations, Karen. And Jen, do you want to raise your hand? Everybody, you know Jen. Jen is the one responsible for the newsletter along with Rachel. So. If you wanted to know who, it's Jen back that way. And then my final item, I wanted to just pass some of my time over to Nick. Do you want to talk about that now, Nick? The Downtown Fiber Network, Nick Nevins works in our engineering group in the telecommunications. This was another agenda item, but it kind of rolls into this one quite naturally. So, yeah, go ahead.
Project has received multiple awards at the local, regional, and national level, the most recent being the Register Guard's Innovation and Talent Celebration selection for the 2019 Public Impact Award. And I just want to say that this project is a perfect example of how we can strategically implement products that are outside of our core business for the community, for the benefit of the community.
And thanks, Nick. I just wanted to add, City of Eugene, I know Ann is here, and they're kind of leading that effort, along with Technology Association of Oregon, as well as LCOG. So there was a lot of mutual participation amongst the agencies. And so we'll see what we get asked to do next. It seems like when something is successful, you want to do more of it, and so we'll see where it goes.
Commissioner Mattel.
Just following up on John Brown's comment about the folks upriver who wanted to make a follow-up presentation. I believe we had a presentation from them last year when we did our upriver meeting, which I guess has shifted to the spring. I don't remember whether it's April or May. I've kind of forgotten. But perhaps that's the best time to have them come back and give us an update as to where they are with fundraising and other kinds of goals. So that would be my suggestion, and I'd be happy to hear from them a second time.
I would just confer to Ann if you can make sure that we get that on the upriver agenda as an option. That would be great. Thank you. Thank you, President Carlson.
Thank you very much for bringing the award and showing us, and for everybody for making it happen. I think that's a really great partnership, and look forward to hearing more in a few minutes. Okay, we will move on to public input. We have a facility awareness and safety briefing. If you would like to sign up to speak for public testimony, there's a table outside where there's forms. Please fill out that form and give it to Ann. Visitors are only able to access the first floor of the building. Restrooms are out this door all the way to the end of the hall, the right. The exits in case of an emergency are here and through those doors. And if we need to exit for any point, for any emergency and such, the meeting point is in the flagpoles near the parking lot. So if we need to evacuate, please meet near the flagpoles. Other than that, we will open it up for public input. So far, I only have Ann Fryfield currently, so I will read the public input information here, and then Ann will be up, and then we'll see if anybody else has signed up at that point. Because I think we're a few minutes ahead of it, so we may need to have another time here. Okay, public input. Please state your name and optionally your address and speak firmly towards the microphone. Each speaker will be offered 3 minutes to present their testimony. Our board secretary, Ann Call, will keep time. Please see the presentation screen, which will indicate your time remaining. A chime will sound when you have 30 seconds remaining, followed by a series of beeps when your time has elapsed. After all testimony is heard, each commissioner will have an opportunity to speak if they choose, although by policy we do not engage in a back-and-forth dialogue. Please note that failure of a commissioner to speak shall not be construed as support of or opposition to any speaker's testimony. If a question is presented by a speaker and the board does not provide an answer, an eWeb staff member will contact the speaker so that the question can be addressed at a later time. Okay, I will open the public session, public input session, and we'll open it up to Ann.
I'm Ann Fifield. I work at the City of Eugene. I'm the Economic Strategies Manager, and I just wanted to come tonight really to offer my support to your staff person, Nick Nevins, that I've been working with Nick for a number of years now on the Eugene Fiber, the Downtown Eugene Fiber Project, and I want to thank you all as a board for your partnership on the project. It has been a really positive success. We have completed construction of the network connections to over 80 buildings downtown. As Nick said, we've won a lot of awards. One that we won this fall was a national award it was a National Government Innovation Award, and we won in the public sector innovations category. Other awardees were Boston, Massachusetts, Austin, Texas, Department of Defense, the Internal Revenue Service, and Eugene's EugeNet project. That innovation was driven by eWeb staff. When people first started talking about building a fiber network downtown, the path that everyone looked at was utilizing those abandoned steam pipes. eWeb staff looked at it, and they said, you know what, it's just not going to work for all kinds of reasons. But we have this other idea, and that's to run microduct through the existing electrical conduit. To our knowledge, no other community has built a network this way. They've done it on college campuses, but not in a downtown area. That's why we win these innovation awards. Not only did we get this successful fiber network, we did it in a really cost-effective way because of eWeb's creative solution that leveraged existing infrastructure. It's a good project for so many reasons. You can tell it's a success because people now just assume they're going to have really good internet access downtown. We have 7 internet service providers competing for service on the eWeb network. That has driven costs for retail customers down. Service levels are about 10 times faster than they were before the network was built, and prices are generally half of what they were before the network was built. Office vacancy rates have dropped in the last 3 years. They're down to about 6%. We're actually seeing interest in new office construction. There's new office construction coming over there across the street from the Fifth Street Public Market. And we couldn't have done it without eWeb's solid and really excellent partnership on the whole project. And I want to thank you as a board for being there for the community. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Really appreciate that description. All right. Do we have any others that have signed up? Okay, so we're 10 minutes ahead at this point, so we'll have to check in another 10 minutes. But for now, I'll close this public session, and then I'll open another one back up if we have others that come to speak. And we will move on to approval of the consent calendar. Do I have? Okay,
I'd like to pull number 2.
Okay, pulling number 2. Any others that would like to pull? No. Okay, I'll entertain a motion.
So moved.
Okay, motion for the balance of the consent calendar. Do I have a second?
Second.
Okay, all those in favor of approval of the balance of the consent calendar minus number 2, say aye.
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 All those opposed? No. It passes unanimously. Okay. John Brown, number two.
Okay. Number two is the appointment of board appointment consultants. And in the backgrounder, we talked about two general counsels and recommendation requested action. But in the document that we have here on the agenda, it only has one. So I'd like to make sure that the record states that we're also ratifying the ability to negotiate a contract with Harang Long, Gary, and Rudnick as alternative general counsel.
Okay, any discussion? Okay, do I have Commissioner Helgeson.
Frank, could you just clarify for us the information that was in the packet relative to Harang Long? I don't object to what's indicated here, but I just, I'd like to hear your explanation of their role and what was contemplated kind of vis-a-vis the background memo.
Certainly, Commissioner. I think that when we look at general counsel, the word general can be very broad, and when you do talk about legal counsels, especially for board-appointed consultants, there are certain degrees of areas of expertise. While the board does not directly use board of legal counsel a lot, having the option, especially Harang Long, which has broadened their capabilities in the last several years, to deal with things like HR issues, potentially real estate issues, potentially power issues, I think it would be very beneficial for the board to have that expertise within their bailiwick, just as an option for you to call on when needed. So that was the rationale behind it, both their capabilities as well as the flexibility of the board to do that. We, as staff, already use Harang Long for very specific purposes. So this is a slightly different contract for the board to be able to leverage.
I have no objection to that. I know Harang Long and the role that they've played, particularly on the HR front, and they're good people to deal with. I would simply ask that this not be considered a shift to them as our primary general counsel, unless and until we go through a more formal process to establish that. And that doesn't mean that we can't use them on occasion for specific things as we have in the past, or even things that we might otherwise be going to other people for. But I just would be concerned that we not make that so formal as to make that our primary consultant without going through a more formal process.
Okay.
Is that still within the spirit of what you intended here?
I like the diversity. I don't like making sure that we have a contract with one individual, and when that individual goes away, then what? And so we have diversity, and the basis for hiring one individual is because, well, I have longevity with the firm. Well, that goes away, and then we're stranded. So diversifying our ability to call on a variety of consultants that have expertise and they're equal, I think it's in the spirit of a good business. So I have no problem with calling either one of them.
Okay. Commissioner Mattel.
Well, I'm just going to agree with John Brown. I think there's some value in diversifying to sort of guarantee that there's a local pool of expertise to serve our needs greater than a single firm. So I do think there's some value there. But I also wanted to clarify, for purposes of this motion, we are just increasing our flexibility. We aren't making a decision that's any more than that at this point. We're just taking an action such that should we want to hire them sometime this year, either one of those two firms to do anything, we have the ability to do so because of the action we're about to take now.
That's correct.
Okay. Quick.
I have no objection to any of that. I would point out, however, that the term or the title general counsel has meaning in the context of representing our interests, and I'm not weighing in for one party or other vis-a-vis who serves in that role, but I'm not objecting at all to our having flexibility to use whatever legal counsel is meets our needs, but I'm just not clear in my mind what would be the effect of what's proposed here. Is that to have two parties listed as general counsel? Or just, I mean, we always have the freedom to hire another attorney, so what exactly are we doing in a formalized way vis-a-vis okay. this action?
The way I see it, it's no different than what we have in front of us. We have two real estate people. We have Arnold Gallagher and we have Watkinson Laird, and we can call in any one of them. It's just the fact that, you know, right now we just have one general counsel. If that general counsel dies tomorrow and has all this institutional knowledge, what do we do?
I just think it's kind of weird to list two parties as general counsel. The notion of general counsel, except for those areas that we've called out specifically to be represented by other parties, such as these real estate parties, such as Cable Houston in the case of being our special counsel, which is also on the consent calendar tonight, has a meaning, and having not, when we don't call that out, we're essentially saying that that's a role that's played by that whoever carries that title. So I guess I'll support what's being proposed here with some lingering confusion about what it intends vis-a-vis that role and its traditional meaning in the context of conducting our business.
Okay, any other comments before we, I don't actually have a, I don't have a motion and a second, so I need a motion and a second.
I do have just a follow-up. I just want to appreciate, you know, Dick's comments. I think they're well-intentioned and well-taken, and I agree. We should probably owe it to ourselves and others to clarify that in the, you know, in the coming months, but I don't think that it, again, at this point in time, we're just preserving some or creating some options, but I agree there's some value in being clear about our intentions going forward.
Okay. Do I have a motion? I don't.
I'll move to make sure that Harang Long, Gary, and Rudnick are as alternative general counsel provider and as a board-appointed consultant.
And I'll second the I guess it's not a amendment.
The amendment. Okay. Right.
Could I just make a clarification? The motion is to add this to the roster, and then you would need to actually go back and approve all of item number twos.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, so motion on the floor to amend to add Harang Long, et cetera. sorry, I don't know the rest of the name there. Okay, let's all vote. All those in favor, say aye.
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 All those opposed?
Nay.
Okay, motion passes.
That's the amendment.
That's the amendment to the, to number two. Okay, so then I need a motion on number two, and if there's any other discussion on that.
I'll move to adopt number two as amended.
Second.
Okay. Any discussion on the slate of number two? No. Okay, seeing none, all those in favor of number two as amended, say aye.
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 Aye. And none opposed. All right.
Madam President, what is the name of the law firm that you're...
Harang Long...
Rudnick.
Gary and Rudnick, okay.
Gary and Rudnick. I was forgetting.
Thank you. It's clearly not Harang Long, et cetera. Okay. All right. So we are now at 6:10. Has anybody else signed up for public input? This time? Okay. I will close the, I closed the previous public input, so I don't need to reopen it. So we're done there. And we can move on to election of board officers. All right. I will open it up to general. Okay. John Brown.
I'll move to, I'm going to do a combined slate in my motion. Okay. Move to elect Steve Mattal as president and Minnie Schlossberg as vice president.
Okay.
I'd be happy to second that, yeah.
Wonderful. Okay, any other comments? Seeing none. Okay, all those in favor of the motion, say aye.
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 All right, motion passes. Well, I get to pass this over to you, sir, and you can pass me that one. I'll send that down to Mindy.
There you go.
Thank you. And you can have all this paperwork here.
Well, thank you. Well, the first order of business, I suppose, is to thank Sonia Carlson for her service as president this past year. Thank you, Sonia. I guess we'll pick up right where we are here. Let's see, number eight is the 2020 appointment of board liaison assignments and committees. Frank, do you have a list of those, or is there a list somewhere available that I can look at?
Mm-hmm. You want it?
I don't know what they all are by my by memory. Thank you. Let's see. Let me just very quickly review the positions that we have available. I'll just read through it very quickly, and then we can come back to making appointments. So we have a liaison to LCOG, currently served by Sonia. Liaison to Mackenzie Watershed Council, although we have a year or two ago designated eWeb staff, not a commissioner. The OPEB board is currently served by John Brown. Northwest NPPA is served by Dick Helgeson, and there's some complications there with, as Dick has explained recently, it's not just, he has some voting rights there that we as a board do not have the ability to replace should we replace him. There's the liaison to the Springfield Utility Board, served also by John Brown, Lane Electric Cooperative, that's me. And then I believe we added a new one last year that's not listed here, but it's the liaison to the City of Eugene Council.
It's added to the new.
Okay, so it's not on the sheet here in front of me. So that's the list that we have. Let's see, I suppose we'll just take them in order. LCOG, currently served by Sonia. She is its current president. Is that true?
No, I'm not president, but I was elected in the last meeting to be on the executive board.
Pardon me.
I'm willing to continue that role if others would like to have me there.
Well, that sounds like a good plan to me. Does anybody object to having Sonia continue in that capacity? All those in favor, please raise your hand and say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay, that takes care of that one. The Mackenzie Watershed Council, we're skipping. We're moving on to the OPEB board. John Brown is the current designee. Are you willing to serve in this capacity for a subsequent year, by the way? Is anybody else interested in gaining this experience? I did it 1 year. Well, I nominate John Brown to do it for one more year. He's getting good at it. Is anybody opposed to that or would like to see something different?
No, I'm opposed. Sorry, I'm just kidding. No.
Well, you don't have a vote on this.
No, I don't.
So. All right, all those in favor for John Brown to serve his 2020 term in the OPEB liaison, please raise your hand and say aye.
Aye.
Aye. You didn't vote. All right.
Okay, I'll vote for myself.
Yeah. There we go. All right. So Northwest Public Power Association. Dick, would you just walk us through the situation we find ourselves in?
Okay, I currently serve on their board of trustees. It's the position that is designated for a policy level individual representing municipal utilities on their board. Their board is about 30 people. I am willing to continue to serve in this role for a period of time this year. And I put it out there to all of you over the last while, and I'm not sensing a whole lot of interest. What I would propose, if that's the case, is that I signal to them that I'm not running for another term of office and that I'll be finishing my current term at the end of the year. And that would allow them to nominate and fill that position as of June so that they can have continuity in that slot. We have the opportunity to have one of you nominated if you have an interest and be considered at their March meeting for being put forward at their annual meeting in June. So I'd rather do that than just stay on the board through the end of the year and then bail on them and have them left with a vacant position. And if that's acceptable to you all, I would be willing to serve in this capacity through June, and I would then indicate to Scott Corwin, their CEO, our intent. And if you, one or more of you, has an interest and you express that tonight, I could also indicate that we would be in a position to nominate a successor, but just recognizing that that's kind of a competitive process and we may or may not be successful. So if that works for everybody, it works for me, and all I'd need to know is whether or not there's any interest in pursuing that further after June.
Well, let's take that question then. Is anybody interested in following in Dick's footsteps? Keep in mind that there are, I believe it's four meetings a year, is that correct?
There are three meetings a year plus an annual meeting.
That sounds like four.
No, there are three meetings.
What's the annual meeting?
There are three or four meetings a year.
There are three meetings, one of which occurs at the time of the annual conference, and that's why you're hearing some confusion.
And each of these meetings requires a day or so of travel on either end and a couple of days commitment in a location often difficult to get to, I understand.
Well, let's say remote.
Remote. Hearing all of that, is anybody interested in vying for one of these available positions on that board? As Dick said, it's a competitive process.
Competition. I would like to make a comment. So I'm kind of reading the tea leaves here. So we're going to have two new commissioners, and we've got, it is a very big time commitment. And you got to take away from family, job, and everything else. And it was almost a month when I did it. I did it for several years, and I was on the executive committee. So I'm kind of looking at where the gun's pointed right now, and towards me. And so, not that I want to volunteer to do this, but I've got a situation that I would consider it next year to go back and do it. Not that I really want to go ever back to Reno again or Sacramento or Walla Walla, but I'll do it. If it's important that this organization have representation on that board, and we have two new people, I don't think it's fair to send them off. I look at personal situations. I don't think it's fair there. I've got a little different situation where I could go and do it. It's, I would scream and holler a little bit getting drugged to the altar.
I want to suggest that that's admirable, and I appreciate not only your prior service but your indication of willingness to serve again. NWPPA is a good organization. It's good to support them for the good of the order. Mm-hmm. It also kind of gives us a pipeline into the work that they're doing that we otherwise would be just reading about in their monthly newsletter. But I think it's optional. There is some expense involved. I've tried to keep that to a minimum. And I don't know that that our interests with that organization are such that we have to have a level of influence that would require that we maintain that position. So I'm not trying to persuade you one way or the other. I'm just saying that it's not something that we necessarily have to fill. It was a position that we were offered long ago in exchange for becoming a member again, quite frankly. So one of our choices is whether or not we wish to preserve that, and if so, who would serve. And so if what you're saying is you think it's in our interest to keep that and you'd like to serve in it in that capacity, I will certainly discuss that with Mr. Corwin, and probably the process forward is to tend your name as a nomination to be considered by the nominating committee in March.
Yeah, I've got to check with my wife because she's not going. I guarantee you that.
Let me ask a couple questions. Frank, would you give us your take on the strategic value of maintaining the membership at the elected level on this board?
So, sure. Thank you. That's what I was going to weigh in on. I do think that there's an opportunity for someone to get exposure within the industry as an individual, as well as represent the utility at a governance level. I would provide a little bit of context in the sense that both from providing input on the various trainings that are provided by NWPPA, I have a very good relationship with Scott. We participate in a lot of the activities with NWPPA as well as a working level. So from a strategic value, we have a lot of inroads into the organization, which also includes political lobbying at the Northwest level and the national level. So while I think there's governance value and maybe value to the individual, I think if we took a hiatus from the board, then it would not be detrimental to EWEB as an organization.
Let me ask one other question. Too late. Prepare for a whole year of it. We haven't heard directly from Mindy or Sonia whether you are interested in the learning opportunities, et cetera, associated with representing. I reckon all of the time and commitment notwithstanding, I still want to hear whether you're interested.
I would just need to know, is it really a month of your time?
It's at least three and as much as 4 days, three times a year in remote locations. The business part of it extends over a couple of days. That's the extent of it. I have been able to meet the obligation without much trouble because I'm retired and I don't have a work schedule to keep. So that's a consideration for those of you that do. It's worthwhile. It's useful. It's good from a networking standpoint, and they do a lot of good work on our behalf. But I agree with Frank that it's not essential to meeting our needs and interests vis-a-vis that organization, and I suspect we would remain a member regardless.
I've recently
taken a new position at work, and I have a young son, and I'm already gone quite a bit with my other board member opportunities, so I couldn't possibly swing being away that much more. So,
all right. Well, I think what I'm hearing is that there's value in keeping Dick Helgeson in the position this year because he does have voting rights at least for 6 more months, and that we feel okay about foregoing that opportunity thereafter, and we can revisit this issue of who replaces him. Mindy may be interested, and John might be dragged along, so we can have that discussion at a later date unless I'm missing something.
Can I ask then that you appoint me without limitation, because I think we can make a decision as to whether or not to. I mean, the other alternative is to keep me in that role and let it expire, and then they've got 6 months of an empty slot in which we can take another run at it when you've got two new people on the board. So why don't you
say what you would like us to do, and then we'll probably do it.
Appoint me to fill this position, and let me know, if not now, subsequent to this, whether or not any of you are interested in serving, because I would like to talk with Scott Corwin about queuing up a replacement so that they don't have a vacant position.
All right.
Before you do that, can I ask that, could you get us a list of the meeting schedules and the locations? Because I know, like, when
sure.
they have them in Anchorage, that's a pretty big haul to get there and back, and the logistics of that. And just kind of see what the schedule is for the next 2 years.
I'll do some follow-up with you. Why don't you appoint me at least through June, and we'll follow up as appropriate. I'm sorry this is taking so long.
That's kind of fun. Go ahead.
I would just recommend that Commissioner Helgeson be appointed to the position without restriction. That way, if it ends up fulfilling through June or through the end of the year, that can be discussed freely between Commissioner Helgeson and Scott Corwin of NWPPA.
All right. All those in favor of reappointing Dick Helgeson for the entire year of 2020 to the Northwest Public Power Association, please raise your hand and say aye.
Aye.
Aye. I don't believe any opposed. There were not. Okay, that's that one. We got a few more. Springfield Utility Board. John, you want to give us a sense of what this involves?
That was just basically the initial liaison to start the dialogue with SUB about the joint water facility, and we haven't had any meetings since that. And it was just myself and the board president, John DeWinter, meeting and talking. And so while we're there, I'm willing to keep that. I mean, it's just kind of a, you know, an ad hoc thing. It's not really a standing committee. It's just as needed. So if you want to keep that position, sure. Put my name down.
And is anybody else interested in it? I just want to make it open to all.
I'm interested in helping support as needed. I know after one of the previous events that we held with them, as I was the president, I met with John a few times over last year, and that was helpful.
But you want to join me or have it? I mean, I'm fine.
But I don't need to be an official
that's
capacity
fine. Yeah.
There.
Okay.
So.
I'll just keep you in the loop then.
Well,
okay.
And I have joined in some of those meetings, and as long as there's no more than two of us, there's no reason not to. So it's perfectly fine to go along with some of those, and it's probably a good thing that gives an opportunity for more of our board members to interact with more of theirs. Dick, you were going to say something.
I believe continuity in this role is important, even though it is ad hoc. I think we have a number of interests jointly with SUB that we've been pursuing, and that I would highlight that many of those issues have a significant political dimension that extends to the city councils, ours and theirs, and that to have someone continue in that role in a way that can support strategically our approach when it comes time to be trying to move agendas with those councils is important, and that it's hard to gin that up at the last minute, you know, out of something that's purely a staff relationship. So I certainly would move that we, for the next year, have John continue in that role, even though we don't have a specific sense of what that schedule looks like.
Is that a motion?
That is a motion.
Well, I'll second that. All those in favor, please raise your hand and say aye.
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 All right, that passes unanimously. We have two to go. The Lane Electric Cooperative, I was in that role last year. It was also new, I think, just like Springfield Utility Board and liaison to the City of Eugene. I met, I think, twice with them. Once I went to one of their monthly meetings with Frank. I believe there was a second interaction, although I can't recall the details of that right now. I'm happy to do it again. It does not take up much time, but if somebody else is interested, more than happy to give it that opportunity to somebody else.
Move to support Steve in that role.
Second.
All those in favor of appointing me back to the Lane Electric Cooperative, raise your hand and say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay, that looked like everybody. The last one is the liaison to the City of Eugene. Mindy, do you mind just giving us a sense of what that involves?
Sure. So it's quarterly meetings. We've only had two. And I believe the idea was that we would elect a liaison, and additionally, the president of the board would also attend. They also have two representatives from City Council. And basically, we're kind of just at the beginning of building that relationship, but we do have quarterly meetings that are scheduled and already on the calendar. I would love to stay in that role if that's okay with everybody else.
Well, I'll just say in Mindy's favor, I attended the meeting today for the first time, and there were at least a couple of times when, quite honestly, their city council members were about to cause us to kind of get lost in the weeds, and Mindy very diplomatically brought us back to the playing field. So I appreciate that. We'd love to see that happen again. Frank, you had something you wanted to say?
I was just going to clarify that this particular liaison role is not a substitute for this board having relationships with the appropriate counselors in your wards. And it was originally designed, and I think it's continued to be that way, specifically around climate and climate change and climate action plans, which is the primary role of this liaison. And I just wanted to make that clarification. It's not a substitute for this board having direct counselor relationships.
Dick?
I appreciate those points. I also appreciate that Commissioner Schlossberg has been willing to serve in that role and looking optimistically at things that could be done there to increase the productivity of our relationship with the city and the city council. I think with all of these roles, there's an expected degree of transparency, and you've all done a good job of reporting to us the work that you're doing, whether this stays limited to climate-related matters or expanded in other matters that don't have in mind at this point, but could come up. It's good to have those relationships and a path for communication that doesn't require that we necessarily wait for another board meeting to talk about things. So I would continue to support Commissioner Schlossberg in that role and would offer a motion to designate
second.
Her for that purpose.
All right, we have a motion, we have a second. All those in favor, please raise your hand and say aye.
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 All right, that takes care of that one. Unless I've missed anything, are there any other? This time last year, right, we kind of in an ad hoc or in the moment, we added two or three that we weren't anticipating earlier. So does anybody have any other suggestions or concerns or organizations that they feel like we should be more connected to than we currently are?
Perhaps the city of Springfield. It was one of the items that we talked about. I don't know if we're ready to make an announcement on that yet, but it does seem like a relationship that we need to continue to build, so perhaps we should consider
Frank, you have
that.
Any thoughts on that?
I think at some point, given that we are approaching things a lot more regionally, it would make sense to have someone in that role. In particular, although it might be part of the natural ad hoc position on the board, so Mindy being the ad hoc representative, not having a specific ward that could be part of that role as well, just by default.
It's a little premature to try to do that tonight, I believe, but I think it's a great suggestion. And as we get into more regional work, in particular with Springfield Utility Board and looking at water resources across both sides of the river, I think it does make sense. But the board will need to decide whether it's part of the role that that particular board member plays, or whether someone else specifically could fill that role. But these liaison roles, from a management perspective and a staff perspective, I think are a tool that we have that is going forward going to be useful. There are, sometimes it's not a technical decision, but it has to do with different political interests and understanding those perspectives. And so while it's been, to quote you already, ad hoc in some of these, when they come up, they're going to be important. And so I would put the city of Springfield in that category, although probably premature to do that tonight.
Mm-hmm. Well, what about even the county? I mean, I was thinking about this when we were doing a lot of our talking about resiliency and the meetings that we had, the countywide meetings. I just wondered if, maybe not now, but eventually, would it be helpful to have some kind of board relationship with the county?
Mm-hmm. Any thoughts on that? Anybody else want to weigh in? Dick?
I think these are all good ideas. I think until we have some specific sense of where the connections are and how that role would play out, that it's probably premature to designate that in that way, and we could handle it a lot of different ways. I wouldn't want to necessarily broaden this role that we've just talked about vis-a-vis the city so much as to be any and all things relative to other governmental entities. And I think one of the considerations here too is when is it the role of the officers to carry some of this as board president and vice president, which often is the case. I don't mean to offer those comments as prejudice one way or the other. I just think it's probably a little soon to designate that.
Mr. Brown.
So I hope we can have a discussion about protocol and expectations in these roles, because I don't want to have mission creep where we have people meeting with the city of Eugene and Springfield and Lane County and them interpreting what is said by our liaisons as representative of the board before we discuss it. And so I think we have to have a protocol of when, before you two meet with the city and you say, okay, we're going to put EV charging stations all over town, wait a minute. You know, and so I want to make sure that we have a procedure and a protocol on how we represent and what we represent, so it's not misconstrued and we don't get off on the wrong foot with them, because all the good work that we do by creating these liaisons will be undone if they have an expectation that doesn't meet the majority of the board or the staff. So, and I don't think we've had that discussion yet. So just so we know before we get too involved in that, just make sure we don't get out over our skis on that one.
I think another related comment is that we might do well, since we've expanded these roles, to just briefly, not here now, but look at our bylaws to make sure that the protocols that you're referencing and the expectations in these roles are adequately captured in the way we've described committee assignments, because I don't know that many of these existed at the time that those bylaws were most recently updated. Just something to look at.
Frank, go ahead, and then I'll help.
I was just going to add that we'll put that on the follow-up list just to review that. I think that's a good point, and certainly understand the scope creep comment. And really, none of this is a replacement for this board having relationships with other elected officials throughout the area. I think that's an important thing for this board to have within the constraints of what we're trying to do strategically and through board action in its entirety. So all good points, and we will follow up on the bylaws and policies issue.
My sense is then we're holding off on any additional appointments, though there were some good ideas. We'll let those percolate. I'll just say, since the issue was brought up, my understanding for all the liaison positions to any of the organizations is that none of us is empowered to make a decision on behalf of all of us until all of us have a chance to weigh in. So those conversations happen. The expectation, of course, is that the anything that requires a decision comes back to this board for discussion and decision, and then probably same thing happens on the other end, whoever it is that we're liaising with. All right, I think we can probably end that and move on to the next item, which looks like it's a break. It's 6:35. I'm noticing that we have less than an hour of activity remaining on the calendar. So just a quick poll, do people want to take that 10-minute break or push through and finish 10 minutes earlier? I'm seeing a push through. All right, so we're pushing through to item number 10, which is base level storage tank upgrades. And it looks like we have Rod Price and Karen Kelly. Welcome. Sorry, Wally, I'm just reading what's on the list, said Rod.
It's a team.
Yes. President Mintal and General Manager Lawson and Commissioners, thank you for having us this evening. We are excited to have some time to talk about engineering, design, and communication planning related to EWEB's water storage improvement projects. And for the record, I'm Karen Kelly, Water Operations Manager with EWEB, and with me tonight are Wally McCullough, Engineering and Planning Supervisor, who will cover the engineering topics, Jen Connors, Communications Specialist, who will cover the communication planning, and Laura Farthing, our Senior Engineer, who is our Project Manager for this project. These are important projects for EWEB and the community. Decommissioning and rebuilding the water storage facilities will cost millions of dollars, take multiple years, and create impactful experiences for the neighbors who are surrounding these facilities. This includes changing their access and use of these spaces and temporarily inconveniencing them, such as noise, street closures, dust, and other construction impacts. However, when these projects are complete, and they will be built to seismic and contemporary operating standards, they will provide more than 40 million gallons of safe and resilient water to our community for generations to come. So our objective tonight is to, one, inform the board, second, to address any of your concerns, and third, to hopefully have you become advocates of these projects. It's important that you as board members are knowledgeable about these projects and supportive, because you're undoubtedly going to get a lot of questions from partners, customers, other elected officials, and so on. Especially giving our new and upcoming bond request to the City of Eugene to pay for these improvements, and again, those highly concerned customers who are surrounding those properties will likely be reaching out to you. So last fall, I came before you with Wally to talk about the water capital project, and we talked a lot about the Safe Drinking Water Act multiple barrier approach. And I just wanted to mention that, again, we strive to consistently provide clean, safe water to our customers at affordable rates. And to do that, we use this approach. We have these barriers in place to reduce contamination to the system. And these projects in particular account for our secure water supply network and also for emergency preparedness. And I want to point out that these projects affect all of our customers. So these are found in our base level pressure zone, serving everyone. You cannot move the water to the upper level zone that serves only 13% of our demand without it first going through that base level. So we're talking about everyone, not just the folks who are surrounding these projects. And then I want to mention that these projects are critical because they are part of our resilient spine. Santa Clara, Hawkins, and College Hill are all part of that resilient spine in the base level, and the proposed East 40th site is also going to be part of that base level. The reason the replacement of College Hill and Hawkins and the construction of the East 40th tanks have been part of our capital plan for several years is due to the issues and problems that we've listed here. First, resiliency and reliability. College Hill and Hawkins do not meet the seismic standards and are not expected to be functional after a major earthquake. If this event occurs or some other major event similar to this, we're going to have a serious delay in service and a major disruption. It could take months, years to recover from. Next up is water quality. College Hill's roof is leaking, and that puts our water quality into question. In addition, there are hydraulic issues with the reservoirs, with Hawkins, and with College Hill in the filling, draining, mixing, and turnover rates of these tanks, which can lead to water quality issues, such as changes in temperature, pH, loss of chlorine residual. In other words, it puts our water into question again and at risk for stagnation, which can lead to contamination. The next issue is operational. Single tanks at each location make it difficult for us to operationally take them out of service in order to do proper maintenance. and repair. And then finally, we have regulatory issues to overcome. So due to the roof leaking and subsequent water quality concerns, the Oregon Health Authority has required us to take College Hill offline or fix the roof no later than 2023. The site also does not meet the security standards and construction standards of today from the Health Authority. And Wally will tell us more about that. I'm going to turn it over to Wally.
Thank you, Karen. This one.
I just used the arrow.
Well, for the last 10 years or so, I've been coming to the board with others with projects up at our Hayden Bridge filtration plant and raw water intakes, and you've been approving those projects, and thank you for doing that. And that was the start of our work on our resilient spine. That was really the whole where everything started. And we're coming to the end of that work. We have one more project up at Hayden Bridge, which will hopefully be here up front of the board in February. But we're really moving downstream into our distribution system, which is really our transmission, our base level reservoir system that Karen mentioned. Also, over the last several years, we used to come in here and we talked to you about our 2015 Water Master Plan. And we had several meetings which went over this plan, and we had a concept called our distributed storage concept. And this is what we're really talking about as far as this presentation is going. On our base level reservoirs, we have two 15-million-gallon reservoirs, two 20-million-gallon reservoirs. Going to a more smaller reservoirs, 5 to 10 million gallons each, distributed throughout our service area that are more seismically robust and resilient and could operate better for the system. And that's what's included in our 10-year CIP. We have about $54 million right now in our CIP for reservoir work, plus some additional several million for transmission work. This is really geared toward replacing College Hill and Hawkins reservoirs, constructing a new reservoir at the East 40th site, strengthening some of our transmission mains, putting in some new transmission mains, and later in the CIP, decommissioning the Santa Clara pump station and reservoir. Security and water quality is one of our primary goals for this project. We want to build these reservoirs and ensure that there's no possibilities of contamination of our water supply. We're also going to be building these to modern seismic standards, as Karen mentioned. These need to be operable after following the large earthquake everybody keeps talking about in the Cascadia subduction zone. These are not only going to provide water for the whole system, but they're also going to provide emergency water storage if we do lose our distribution system. So they'll have features on there where we can get emergency water out of these. And we want to enhance our operational efficiencies. We have these huge reservoirs that it's difficult to take a reservoir out of service. You know, we take one reservoir out of service, that's 25% of our overall supply. It's just difficult. Operationally, and then Karen mentioned the water quality aspects. It's hard to turn over the water in the larger reservoirs. With the smaller reservoirs would enhance that efficiency of the whole system. But while we're doing this, all this work, we also want to be good neighbors. See, we want to limit the visual impacts, make these aesthetically pleasing as possible as a reservoir. And some people like me, like, they look good. They'd be good. I wouldn't be next. Might be next to one. And, you know, there's opportunities for open space at each of these sites. So then we get into the balance, and what we're going to be delving into in the next couple of years is, you know, where is that balance between enhancing the reservoir for open space, visual impacts, and the equity to customers that don't live near the reservoir but still benefit from it and are paying for it. All the reservoirs, you know, are different. We're getting into the middle of kind of conceptual design, getting into land use and permitting. And just by their location, they have different land use and permitting requirements. Our Hawkins Reservoir and the East 40th Avenue Reservoirs are kind of located in the South Hills. And they're part of the South Hills Study Area Plan Policy or whatever they call it. It's kind of a complicated name. But as part of that, while they're in allowed use, we have to go through a PUD process, which requires a tentative and final PUD, similar to a sub subdivision for these two projects. And there's a slew of public involvement that we'll be undertaking as part of that process and receiving input from the public. College Hill, on the other hand, is not part of that South Hill study area and just requires a building permit, really, to do the work. We are, however, going to implement a similar process of public involvement and receiving impact from the neighbors for that project as well that would mimic the PUD process. As far as which one goes first, it's really which one that we're proceeding on all three sites right now in the South Hills, College Hill, Hawkins, and East 40th Avenue. We're running, preparing the PUD documents. We're going to have our first public meeting in College Hill, I think, in a couple weeks.
The informal one.
The informal one. And whichever one breaks free first is the one that we'll construct first. Once the first new tank is in construction, our plan is to build a new tank in every 2 years per our CIP until we'll get eventually six or seven new base level storage tanks out of this program. The one item on our schedule, which Karen mentioned, is College Hill. We'd like to have the first new tank in service in College Hill. The College Hill issue has to be addressed by the end of 2020, by the beginning of 2024, end of 2023. We know there's going to be construction impacts with these projects. These are, I guess I would say, relatively short-term impacts considering the life of the facility, but still the construction is going to last 1 to 2 years per site. That'll be a key part of our public engagement plan, which Jen is actually going to talk to you about next.
Right now?
Yeah.
Good evening, commissioners. In developing our communication strategy, we started by acknowledging two facts. Fact number one, these projects are necessary, and they're a benefit to the entire community, more than 200,000 people, not just in South Eugene, but across Eugene. And fact number two, they will present acute impacts to some customers, particularly the dozens of residents who live adjacent to the facilities and various individuals and groups who have become accustomed to using the sites for recreational purposes. So with those two facts in mind, we developed the following guiding principles. Number one is communicate early and often. With projects of this scope and scale, with so many moving parts and uncertainties in the timeline, it could be tempting to hold back, to wait until we have all the details ironed out, but we know we can't do that. We need to give plenty of notice, communicating what we know when we know it. To quote participants from our 2019 stakeholder interviews, start outreach early and no surprises. Guiding principle number two is tell the good story, and there is so much good news here. It's easy to become focused on construction impacts and public access issues, and those are important. But there's a bigger picture here. It's a story about ensuring safe, reliable water for drinking, fire suppression, and public health. It's about increasing our community's resiliency to earthquakes and other disasters. And, spoiler alert, this story has a happy ending. Because when this work is complete, these sites will return to being excellent neighbors, quiet, beautiful spaces, and our community will benefit from safe, secure water storage for generations to come. And that's the story we want to focus on. Number three is a cornerstone of our communication strategy, and it relates to defining the parameters for public input. Because while there will be decisions to make that benefit from public input, and we plan to reach out and engage stakeholders, there are other decisions that have to be made by qualified engineering and water quality staff. I'll give a couple of examples of those in a moment. We believe it's important to be straightforward with our customers from the outset about this decision-making process, and we hope that doing so will help manage expectations and allow those highly interested stakeholders to focus on how they can take part in the process in the most meaningful way. Numbers four and five go hand in hand, and they relate to anticipating and responding to problems as they arise. Because even with exceptional planning, and design and communication, complications will arise. As a next step, we will develop a risk mitigation strategy that will help us anticipate and plan ahead for a variety of issues. But we also recognize that problems will come up that we did not or could not anticipate, and we'll need to be flexible and resilient in our responses. And that requires ensuring organizational alignment among the project team, with staff and other executives, and as well as commissioners, so that all of us who want to be advocates for these projects have the necessary information and support to perform those advocacy roles. Next slide, please. I mentioned that defining opportunities for public input is a cornerstone of our strategy. This graphic represents those opportunities as a spectrum. On the left, decisions that impact water safety and quality present little to no opportunity for public involvement. Specifically, decisions about where the water tanks are sited on the properties, their size, shape, elevation, how the tanks are secured, those decisions must be made by qualified staff to comply with regulations. We will certainly share information about these topics, consistent with our principle of early and frequent communication, but we won't be in a position to seek public input. However, moving up the spectrum, we will actively ask for public input on construction mitigation and public amenities at the sites. For construction mitigation, we will develop a thorough plan, vet that plan with neighbors, and as the work progresses, engage with neighbors frequently with the goal of making the construction as tolerable as we reasonably can. When it comes time to make decisions about public amenities, such as plantings and other landscaping features, walking paths, and interpretive signage, we will again actively seek stakeholder input. We know that these are some of the topics that people care deeply about because they affect site aesthetics and usability. Like most projects, as Wally mentioned, this will be a bit of a balancing act. On one hand, listening to our customers is one way that we earn their trust and confidence and can improve the quality of our decisions. At the same time, we must consider the interests of all customers, including project goals, budget, and equity issues. Next slide, please. This final slide shows our various audiences and communication tools. A project website is already up and running. The website has all of the information that Wally and Karen shared with you tonight, as well as a few other features. There are email links directly to the project team so that customers can contact us with questions or concerns. There's a link to join an interest list to receive project updates via email, so those who want to receive more frequent or detailed updates can opt in for that. And there are links to informational materials, such as the handouts you received in your board packets. We will be sharing updated printable materials on a regular basis. We'll be hosting several rounds of community and neighborhood meetings, as Wally mentioned. Those will begin as early as Q1 this year, starting with College Hill, possibly late January or early February. Commissioners will receive more details about those meetings as the planning evolves. We'll post signage at the sites, starting with some coming soon type signage and progressing to project and construction related signage. And of course, we will leverage traditional channels such as social media and newsletters.
Go ahead. So with that, we are asking if you are prepared to be advocates for this project. And if not, we're happy to answer any questions or concerns at this time to help you get to that point, because we need you.
All righty. Well, thank you all for your presentation. How much time do we have remaining?
2 minutes.
That's the complete. All right. We will likely need a few more minutes, but why don't we open up a queue for anybody that wants to provide some feedback or have questions. Dick, go ahead.
I appreciate the presentation and your proactivity around this. For some time, I've been concerned about the rather ambitious nature of these projects and just exactly, kind of what we need to be preparing to address and advocate for. I can say, as someone who was instrumentally involved with these facilities over a long period, that these are critical to the ongoing viability of the water system for the entire community. And some of these facilities were built so long ago that the photos of construction are in the Historical Society. So these are critical facilities. We don't have a lot of alternative site options. You have to be at a certain elevation, and I don't mean just sort of in the neighborhood of a certain elevation. It has to be exactly at a particular elevation. You have to have a site that's big enough to accommodate a large a much larger tank than we see in the higher elevations. And you have to be distributed around the community in ways that connect hydraulically and otherwise for purposes of water system distribution. So, you know, the first thing that we'll hear is, well, can't you put these things somewhere else? And I appreciate kind of that we've got some limited flexibility in that kind of hierarchy that you illustrated on this slide, Jen. One of the interested parties and stakeholders that I didn't see listed there that I think is absolutely critical and probably we need to be out front with because they got King's X is the city council. Because, you know, the first thing we'll hear is people coming to us with concerns. And when we, since we're geared up to move forward, sound like we're not listening, the next place they'll go is to the city council. And the city council, will, if they're caught off guard, you know, with something that sounds controversial, will have all kinds of concerns and has, through the planning process, plenty of opportunity to delay or even derail some of these plans. So I think you should add them to the slide up there with kind of in that last category and have a strategy with our help to, you know, whether it's in a joint meeting that we may or may not have in the near future or through these periodic meetings that members of the board are participating in. You know, I think we ought to brief them on this up front, acknowledge kind of what's in there, but also secure at least their understanding, if not their support, as we move out and begin to engage the community with our plans, because I think they can confound things if they are brought to something controversial without an understanding of what we're about, and this has largely been off their radar screen for a long time. So I think that's important.
Excellent points. John, do you want to jump in the queue?
Yeah, thank you very much. I really appreciate your approach and everything, and you kind of date me there because I was around when we sealed that reservoir, and now I've outlived it again. So correct me when I'm wrong. So we're going to tear down the tower. We're not going to sell any real estate. We're going to tear down the existing facility. Is that correct? So
that's the current plan.
Okay. But College Hill is basalt, so I assume we're going to blast. We're going to use dynamite, and we're going to blast, and we're going to do all that fun stuff. Is risk management going to do anything about looking? Because those homes have been up there for 50 and 60 years, and there's probably a lot of settlement, and there's a lot of cracking going on. And I know what happened when they built the library. There was a lot of claims for settlement because they did some excavation. And are we going to be concerned with monitoring the condition of the surrounding properties? Because there's properties within 20 feet of where we're going to be blasting. And I guarantee you that, you know, if there's some concern there that, you know what happens when we have a power outage? Are we going to do anything to mitigate that to confirm the condition of those properties? Because I think if we damage properties through blasting, we need to pay for it. But if we don't damage them, I don't want to buy a new foundation for somebody that's, you know what I mean? I just
exactly.
want to make sure we're fair to the process.
We will require, as part of the contracts, they'll have the option to blast, they'll have to. And then they'll have to do or will participate in pre-surveys of all the houses in the area, determine where we think there might be vibration issues. There'll also be vibration monitoring around the areas during the time of blasting. So we'll do pre and post surveys and then monitor while doing the blasting to okay. try and help mitigate that. It all gets recorded on video and through photo
that's,
evidence.
That's really good. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. And then on 40th, so we got to go get a PUD, which is always fun in the South Hills study because it's very, very exhaustive. But they can't stop us. They can just add additional criteria. Is that correct? I've got a copy of the South Hills study. It's like a 1970 document, and it's kind of vague. But they can't stop us. They can just require us to paint it pink, so to speak.
It has the same I'll take this one. It has the same criteria as every PUD. So
okay.
there is there is the possibility that a neighborhood group could appeal the hearings official's decision, and it could end up at LUBA.
If we go to LUBA and then we go to Court of Appeals, that's 2 years.
Yep. And so my understanding is, though, because this is why we're kind of moving ahead with all three of them
mm-hmm.
at the same time, because the East 40th neighborhood seems a little more active than the other two.
Well, former commissioner just bought a very significant piece of real estate contiguous to that property, and I've already heard about it.
Yes. So we are, but yes, they can appeal it. However, my understanding from what I've been told from the City of Eugene's planning department is that LUBA sort of has a safety and health clause that it gets approved through LUBA. But
thank
if
you.
It does end up at a LUBA, we'll change the schedule.
Thank you. Thank you.
Go ahead, Mindy.
I just want to echo what everyone else has said, that I really appreciate the presentation. And a couple things that I specifically appreciate are the positive story. I mean, this is a really positive thing. And I know people will complain about the hassle or the noise and the construction and all of that, but something that I think that we, many of us share in Eugene, is how proud we are of our drinking water and how great it is. And so I appreciate that you're framing it in that way. And I also thank you for laying out what the public process will look like and what kind of input people will have. I think being transparent about that is really important, because something I've seen in the public process is that people want to weigh in on everything. And so, and when they don't feel heard is when you get a lot of discord and trouble. And so letting people know up front that these are kind of the things that we're looking for input on, and the other things we're going to leave to the experts. So thank you for that. And then just one little thing is that several months ago I got a call from somebody who lives in the College Hill neighborhood and saw that we had an executive session on property and called me in a panic because they thought that we were going to do something with this site, maybe sell it, and they had no idea what was going on. Maybe there was some talk going on in the College Hill neighborhood. So I assured that person that there would be a public process, and I haven't heard back. So maybe that means that we're doing some good outreach and people know that they'll be included in the process. Thank you.
Sonia, do you want to jump in? You don't have to.
Quick comment. Basically echoing the same that Mindy said. I really appreciate the output. I like the positive story, and also think that it's really important that we're clear with people about what things they do have choice over and what things regulations kind of dictate where we need to go and where we need to be. I mean, the limitations that Dick talked about, they're there. I mean, that is what it is if we're going to build on that site and where it is. And so I do appreciate that very clear communication about what we can and cannot do. I am curious, since we are increasing security on the site, though, how much that impacts public access. Because I think that public access is one of the things that is one of the big values, especially in the College Hill area, that I hear about a lot, people accessing it. So I'm wondering if you have any thoughts on how that might change to meet the new regulations, and if that's, I mean, I'm assuming that it's not people walking on the top of it, because that's damaging to the structure and causes security issues in that regard, but maybe there's still access around it with fencing. So if you can...
You're correct. So the requirements now, and they may not have been in the construction standards, of course, when these were built, is to have the facility fenced, and public access is no longer a piece of that. So that is correct. Not on the roof and not able to come up next to the reservoir. the actual look of the fence and so forth is up to city code and other considerations. But it does appear that there will still be significant space that could be made available for public open space, and that's part of the conversation. And if you look in your packets, there was a diagram that showed potentially where these would be located, and you can kind of get a visual. In fact, I think we have these here. You can get a little bit of a visual in terms of what that open space may be. So, Laura, do you want to chime in?
That... Karen's correct. So the idea is to maintain as much open space as we can. And it kind of ties into blending with the neighborhood. I knew it was going to explode. The Sterno can, I believe. It's been making noise the whole board meeting. So the idea is to keep as much public open space as possible and to still keep the actual site open to the public. But the facilities will be secure, and that's our message going forward.
Perfect. Yeah, I think letting people know that that is not in the cards up front as early as possible is going to be one of those key points, because I know that there's particular community groups that use that space on a regular basis, and that's okay. Public safety, water quality safety are absolutely first. And unfortunately, that's just where we need to go. That's where the times are. So anyway, thank you very much. I really appreciate the public output. Please let us know when we can start being engaged, because there's some people that have reached out to me as well, even though I'm not, you know, the representative in some of the areas. And I would love to be able to share the information if you feel like it's, you know, ready for that time. So
those flyers that were in your packet are already published on the website.
Okay.
So they're, you can feel free to share them.
Perfect. Send it out.
All right, I'll jump in the queue, and then, Frank, I know you have some things to say. You can bat last. First off, if that sternal can blows, remember, it's the flagpole. That's where we need. So just a couple bits of feedback. You had the one slide where you were showing whether there was limited or no opportunity really for feedback and or input and influence, and then all the way up to high. I mean, I think I understand the point, and it's good to create some clear opportunities, this slide right here, for folks to participate. But that word, you know, high, like high opportunities, I just think that's a mischaracterization. I still think it's pretty limited in terms of what we where we expect to create opportunity for the public to get involved. And I just think we want to set expectations appropriately from the get-go. There are opportunities for them to help choose what the landscaping will be, and I don't know, the color of the fence. There's a few things like that. I would not characterize, if that's what it is, I wouldn't characterize that as high, and they ought to know that at the outset. And because if you do that, people are going to ask for the sky, and we're going to be put into a position right away to say no, 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 which I think is the thing we're trying to avoid. So I just think that needs to have some more work. The reality is there really is a limited opportunity all the way around. But where they should focus is in that last category, I think, is really what the message is. And then the other thing is to say that I'm glad that John Brown told us that there was going to be blasting, because that changed the thing for me. Not so much that I would say we shouldn't go forward. This is absolutely essential, and I think it's a no-brainer as far as gaining the public support. As soon as they hear that those things are not seismically structured currently and would not survive an earthquake, I think you're going to get everybody's support and people are going to be willing. But it's important that we understand what those, you know, what it really means out there on those sites well in advance. And so I hope this is a lesson for us. If there's other things like that the construction is going to involve blasting and that there might be cracks to foundations and these all these other concerns, we as a board need to know that well in advance. I do not want to be finding out about that from a city councilor or a concerned member of the neighborhood association or whatever it is. I want to hear from you all months, if not years, in advance. Frank, go ahead.
I was just going to add that I think the comments around the city council are appropriate. We do that. The engagement is starting now. We do have a meeting with the city council, I believe on January 22nd. Part of that is a precursor to the fact that we're asking for support of us going out and getting funding. So it is understandable that we would start the education process as soon as possible. I do think that it's really important for us to characterize the opportunities for more or less engagement, which is what you're talking about. Within the constraints that we have, there are budgetary constraints, there's timeline constraints, there's regulatory constraints as well. But these, for some period of time, will be construction zones, and we need to provide pictures and examples. One of them you saw on this presentation, that was the reservoir at Hayden Bridge. There will be times when traffic controls, foundations, noise, and we will be as flexible and work with this as best as possible, but we cannot leave the impression that, oh, you're just going to walk out someday and here's going to be this nice reservoir that's going to last for 50 years. I also think it's an important point that we're looking at not large reservoirs, we're looking at several smaller reservoirs. It doesn't look likely. At one point, we were talking about having surplus property on College Hill. It looks like the recommendation will be that we keep that property. We might start with one or two, and then we replace a third, you get rid of the first. It would be a real shame if 50 years from now, the engineers had to figure out how to take reservoirs out that they can't take out. And I think one of the big concerns with that neighborhood was that a development was going to go into that site, and it doesn't look like that's what's going to happen. So just a couple comments.
Any final comments from board members? Dick?
So I don't know if anybody can really see the scale of that from this photo. I was around when that was all going on. And if you go to the back of Hayden Bridge and look out the back and you see the size of that facility, you'll get a really quick and full feeling for what a 15 million gallon reservoir looks like. And I appreciate that we're looking at smaller tanks, but this is no small feat to do one of these. To do multiples within a short, you know, less than a decade time frame is a pretty darn aggressive schedule, particularly given that we're at the front end, lots of potential unknowns and a whole process to wrap around this. So I just hope that we've got some flexibility built into the schedule that lets us deal with things like the mandate to decommission College Hill or deal with the, you know, some contingency plans, because, you know, I know it took more than 2 years to build this reservoir, and I can't imagine that we can build multiple reservoirs in succession and be successful in all of that without having some contingency plans. The last thing I'll say is, and I'll appreciate some one-on-one discussion, I think there are some planning criteria involved that may be shifting on us, you know, moving to smaller reservoirs and potentially in total less base level storage to improve the turnover characteristics. So I'm just curious, I understand what those things are, and there's a fire component and an equalization component and an emergency component. And I'm just wondering if in changing those criteria, there aren't some implications for the rest of the master plan, since a lot of the modeling we do is predicated on some of those planning criteria. And I'll take a discussion of that offline, but just suggest to me that there may be some broader implications for transmission and other things that are related to that
sure.
change.
Anybody else? Karen, did you have anything you wanted to finish up with? You got a lot of feedback from us. If you have anything to say, please do. If not, it's fine.
Oh, I do appreciate everyone's input and support, and I just want to say thank you in advance for helping us tell this good story.
All right, thank you. We have just one kind of major item remaining on the agenda tonight. That's number 11, 2020, Organizational Goals and Performance Measures with Frank Lawson.
So President Mattel, good evening, commissioners. Wanted to review the organizational goals for 2020. By policy, the board is required to provide direction to the general manager on an annual basis relative to the priorities of the utility. Now this is a little bit of a back and forth because the policy also says that I will present draft goals based on what I think you want to see. And so this is a test of that process. There were 8 goals that were presented in the background memo. This first one is very, very similar to last year. It is, in essence, telling the board that we are going to run the utility according to the standards that you've already presented, according to our values, safe, reliable, affordable, and we have a whole host of KPIs, metrics that we will be monitoring to make sure that we are basically keeping the lights on and the water flowing in order to pursue more strategic adventures going forward. So this is really keep the day-to-day operations going and keep the utility on the rails. We have a number of goals that, and I won't read these verbatim, we have characterized these in a few different sections. One is around the first strategic component, which is building customer confidence and building some basis to our technology platform around metering. Those are going to be very important for resiliency work. It's important to align and synchronize with future resource decisions, and also starting to look at how we focus on some of the most common customer interactions and make those just that much less painful and more convenient for customers going forward. That's some of the self-service options and really the bill-to-pay cycle in goal number 3. Emergency preparedness, one of the 2 big ones. We have the emergency sites that we've been working on. We were able to commission another one at the end of last year and also drilled a well at Sheldon. So while we didn't think we were going to get two more, it looks like we've actually gotten 2.5, and we'll do another 1.5 here in the next couple of months. Part of that is making sure that we socialize those sites and the availability of future sites. They aren't going to do any good if people don't know where they are. We've developed signage that is now acceptable to the city of Eugene, a lot like the tsunami signs you see at the coast. So this will tell people where the emergency sites are located. We want those to continue, but we need to make sure that we're reaching out to community partners, to neighborhood groups, and a number of different organizations to help really make sure that public awareness is heightened on those. We're also working with Springfield Utility Board, as directed by this board, to develop and look at a more robust approach to regional water and water resiliency. We know that is not just an issue of a source, but there are interties, there's transmission that you need to be able to move water back and forth, potentially at multiple locations. You need to be able to blend that water, so blending studies, the impacts on water rights, there's a number of things that go into that. This is really a reflection on direction that the board has already provided to us. Within the category of electric resource planning, this is where the IRP work starts to fall, where we're starting to look at methodology around what resource decisions we have going forward, how we model those, how we create outreach, how we create a system for that. And then also very specifically, goal number 7 is one that I think is incredibly important based on, to a certain extent, circumstances around FERC and the canals, but also in the context of the IRP, what direction and what planning can we take, and working with the board and the community relative to our Lower Mackenzie hydro projects. And that's going to have to be looked at in multiple ways, and we would like to work with the board and the community on what that looks like in 2020. And so we have some direction for those projects by the end of 2020. That's why it's an annual goal here. And then finally, relative to specific climate change, greenhouse gas reductions, we have a number of different components to this. A lot of this is what are we influencing the community, which is important. We also are looking at what are we influencing relative to legislation and policy and a reduction in our own greenhouse gases, which was part of a goal that we had set a number of years ago. But this is an issue of conservation, electrification. And the reason that the exact number is not filled in yet is there's twofold. One, we did surpass our goal for last year based on the assumptions we made around carbon intensity of resources and other things, but we're evaluating that further. The actual carbon intensity of the region has changed as well. It has decreased as resources changed throughout the Northwest. In some ways, that can have a favorable impact because if you electrify a different fuel, then you get a more favorable benefit. But simply, if you use conservation energy efficiency, the intensity number makes a difference on that too. So we're working on refining what that exact plug-in number should be. And I know we have a discussion coming up with the board around carbon accounting, and so that potentially could have some influence on that. The important thing here for us is that we understand the intent and the assumptions that we're making so that it actually drives actions. We don't want to put a goal out there that doesn't drive action. And so we want it to make a difference, and we want to know the assumptions that we're making going into it. And so at this point, the agenda item, President Mattel, was either for just feedback and no action, or if the board felt compelled with some modifications in direction to take action and approve these. So it's an either or for the board. of which we could come back next month with something that would be approved, or if the board was comfortable with the direction, we could just take input and move forward from here.
All right, well, thank you for that. We have 12 and a half minutes remaining. Hopefully we can get a round of questions in before I open it up, but just a clarifying question. Frank, this is a new process, right? We have not taken a look at an annual set of goals in the January meeting and approve them. I don't think we've done that in your tenure. You can tell me if I'm mistaken.
So as far as I can tell, in the extended past, we were supposed to have annual goals, and usually they ended up being three-quarters of an annual goal because we never brought anything to the board until March or April. The executives and managers got together starting a month ago and felt like it was important to enter a year knowing what you wanted to accomplish rather than decide mid-year what you wanted to accomplish. And so we did do this last year. It was, I believe, in February or March. So we made a little bit of improvement, but this is the first time we've entered into a year with this is what we want to do.
Well, thank you for that. Personally, I'd really like this. Another clarifying question. I believe you have said you wanted to be, in a sense, held responsible for these personally, that your own evaluation would be judged against these eight. Is that correct?
I was hoping you'd forgotten that part. But, yeah, no, I absolutely agree that these are the things that when and I will do that in March when I come back with the annual report for 2019. It will use those goals that were set forth by this board as part of my evaluation as the chief executive of the organization. So absolutely, these are what I should be evaluated on.
All right, well, thank you for that. I'll open up a queue. John Brown.
Thank you. I'm because you asked for either action or kick it down the road till next month, I'm ready to move forward with explanation on number seven, though. Can you tell me what the word plan means, and then what is it, hydroelectric projects or operations? I mean, to cut to the chase, does that include a TBL analysis of shutting down Walterville and or Leeburg?
Yes, it includes those options.
And the economic impacts and the costs and where we're going to get the money and the whole thing. And we're going to do that by the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm good with everything else. Thank you.
Go ahead, Sonia.
I'm also supportive of moving forward with the KPIs as highlighted here. Thank you. They seem like a really comprehensive list. I think some have loftier goals than others. I think that we can support the climate change legislation at the state level. Obviously, whether or not that passes is out of our control, but I think doing what we can to support that is absolutely critical, and especially around goal number four, heightening public awareness. Within the community on that front, and then also in the other projects that we just talked about with the waterfront. So, thank you.
Dick, go ahead.
I'm comfortable with what you've proposed. Let me highlight a few things that I don't think that are either missing for me or not emphasized in a way that is visible to me. So we've been working on some enabling technology strategies for a period of time now, one of which is AMI deployment. That seems to be in somewhat of a pause or slowdown mode as we kind of iron out some technical issues with full deployment. But I think, you know, continued moving forward with that as close to our original timeline as possible seemed to me, at least originally, to be critical to the strategies that are sort of foretold in the remainder of the strategic plan, as is a CIS upgrade, which I haven't heard a recent report on in terms of our status or anticipated outcomes. And we've been told for some time that our ability to move forward with value-added services to our customers is limited by those technologies. And in general, our IIT infrastructure as it supports all of that. So. I don't see those really addressed here in a way that feels quite as visible to me as would otherwise be appropriate. The other thing that I'm wondering about is that, you know, we're 3 or 3.5 years down the road on this strategy, the first phase of which was to engender customer confidence by a series of actions, which in many respects we have or are taking, and the least of which is that we've managed to not only have a healthy financial condition, but also to keep rates flat or even reduce rates in water over the last 4 years. So, you know, the next phase of this seemed to be reaching out to our customers with kind of a redesign of our product and service offerings to tailor them to not only needs that we anticipate going forward in the future, but also in sort of as much of a one-size-fits-all approach, something that would kind of target different audiences with things that were of value to them to increase the value part of the equation. And I have completely lost a sense of where that goes. It used to be talked about in terms of time-of-use rates maybe as a possibility or other things that, for me, have kind of fallen off the radar screen. So while I appreciate that we're not yet ready to fully engage strategies that begin to treat the question of diversification of services, I don't see that anywhere on the radar screen here. So while I'm comfortable maybe adopting what's proposed here, those are the things that I am seeing as not as visible to me, at least as an individual board member. Maybe the way to address that is to anticipate some status reports on those things over the next while as we set agendas. But those are things that I think are critical to our strategy that are for me kind of falling off the radar screen.
Hold on just a second, Minnie. Did you want to jump in, or do you want to?
Well, do you want to respond to?
Sure, I can respond to that. I think that there are. So first of all, strategically, phase one was about customer confidence. It was about creating an easier to deal with environment. It was about maintaining cost. It was continuing to invest. We are in the midst of doing some outreach directly to customers through both qualitative and quantitative means to kind of get a gauge as to where we are relative to customer confidence and where we've come from. You are absolutely right in the sense that phase two is about building the technology and the systems and the processes around the consumption side and having flexibility in the consumption side. You need products and services for that. The AMI technology is a piece of that. What we realized as we've gotten into it is it's not about the number of meters that we put in. It's about how do we launch this in a way that starts with simple basic functionality all the way from consumption to bill, which is where that one goal was written. It's around the revenue stream first, then building on top of that. So there's elements of what you described within these goals. Technology is important. Products and services are important. Products and services cannot come until we have some of the basics that you've talked about, which are more embedded here. It's not to say that we should do a strategic assessment. I think that's part of what we want to do as looking back on our 2019 report is where do we think we have landed relative to our strategy. We're somewhere between phase one and phase two, that will come as part of that assessment. But those are embedded in here. They just look a little bit different because we don't talk about systems. We talk about functionality and performance. So it's just a little bit different angle on the strategy.
So this is really clear. Thank you. It gives a good direction of what we're going to be working on. The only thing that stands out for me is the goal number 7. I think the rest of them are pretty kind of higher level stuff that's more directed by staff at a higher level planning. And I guess I'm just surprised that we'll have a plan by the end of 2020. And I'm just a little bit more behind than everybody else because you've all been talking about this for longer. But I would really personally like to see some more in-depth work sessions or something around this issue. Maybe I only need it. Maybe you all know about this already. But the impacts of what we're going to do up there are really going to affect a lot of people and property owners, and we've had a long history up there. So I'm sure you have a plan. But
that's absolutely correct. This is why this
this is a pretty specific goal. Mm-hmm. The others tend to be a little higher level. I think that's a good observation. The reason that this is listed at the top levels of the organization is it's very impactful. It's long-term. It affects our community and it affects future resources. We will have a lot of interaction over the next 11.8 months regarding this issue. There's a lot of things for staff to work on. There's a lot of outreach that has to take place. It won't be necessarily a full decision. It's going to be, here's what we think the plan is. Maybe part of the plan is there's something we need to investigate further, or there's something that is another impact that we need to do. But we need to have the conversation and engage the community and look at this from a number of different angles. There may be some significant investments we have to make in the sites, which would also drive the discussions that you're talking about. I expect this to be a lot of interaction with the board and the community.
Thank you.
All right, well, I'll jump in the queue. I'm, like everybody else, sort of happy with the 8 goals as they're listed, but kind of like Dick, I feel like there's some nuance there and perhaps some additional goals that we might want to contemplate adding. I only had a chance to read this, frankly, this afternoon, so I just haven't had a lot of time to really process. So I'm inclined to want to delay action. I don't think that delays the ability for you all to move forward on the 8 things that you have outlined, but this is a relatively new process. I think it's a really important process. I'm glad that we're integrating it in this early in the year, and the fact that it ties back to your performance review, all those things seem really good to me, but I need a little more time, or I feel like I need a little more time to wrestle with it. So if folks are, I guess that's what I'm asking for, or if it causes any problems for you, Frank, to delay that action.
We're moving ahead. I'll just put it that way. I don't think there's anything that gets derailed from this. I think it really is important if you need the time to align that you align. Some of these, the details come out in the measurements of them. And so in the reporting of them, this is what this looks like. There's the so when someone asks, did you accomplish this goal? We have to have the mechanism to say yes or no. And by the way, here's why. Here's how we think this is evaluated. So these tend to be a little bit high level, but we also know that there's a lot of work that takes place behind these relative to how we measure them, how we characterize them, what we use to drive the daily activity that meets these objectives. So yep. There's more to it. It doesn't matter to me whether these get approved tonight or not.
Yeah, I'm not hearing any opposition to these 8. I'm just hearing potential expansion. So there's no reason not to move forward on those. Go ahead, Dick.
I would appreciate the opportunity for a little more thought on this. But I also, if we were to take that action, which essentially tables it until such time that we do take action, I'd like to have a sense of when we, for Frank's sake, when we would approve these and what are the mechanisms we're going to use to either provide additional feedback or resolve any outstanding interests or concerns. Will that just be a dialogue at one-on-ones with Frank kind of taking custody of that and bringing forward a final version, or what's your proposal for how that works?
Well, that's a good question. I haven't had time to think that through, although I think that's about right. It's probably best handled in one-on-ones with Frank, and then we would see an amended or an updated version of this in time for action at the next meeting.
Typically what we've done is if you wanted to provide direction and feedback uniquely, we can do that in our check-in, and then it would more than likely appear either on the consent calendar, which could be pulled if there's further discussion. I can incorporate comments as long as I don't get comments that are 180 degrees apart, which I'm not expecting. Then it would be incorporating comments that would be consistent, and coming back as part of the consent calendar in February would make sense. If there's issues that we have to discuss, it could get pulled and wouldn't necessarily have to be an agenda item. It could be, here's the comments that I've incorporated through the one-on-one discussions, here's what's changed, and if everybody's comfortable, they could move forward then.
Let me just say, I think it starts in any case with, discussion, one-on-one discussions with Frank. We're not in a position to deliberate those or see what those all look like until you know, Frank produces some kind of a document and people may be uncomfortable with some elements of it, or Frank himself might say, hey, that's too much for me to be judged on for any one particular year. So I guess I'm imagining that we'll see the document when we see it, and if folks feel like it merits, you know, discussion back and forth, then they'll have to do that. If not, it can be a consent calendar item. We'll just have to see as we go. I think this is a relatively new kind of process. We'll just have to play it out a little bit.
But the hope is we could wrap it by the February meeting?
That would be the hope. I mean, of course, I think we all understand that these are 2020 goals. The sooner we set them, the better off we are.
Okay, I just had one more comment, and that's for you to consider, and I can touch base with you on our one-on-one. I don't know how we accomplish goal number 7 without first accomplishing goal number 6, because I believe that at the end of the day, a significant portion of that decision and that plan will rest on the cost and the alternatives for replacement resources, and in order to evaluate that, I think you need item 6.
Oh, go ahead. I was going to argue with him in private, but if you want to do it in public, that's okay.
I want to hear the answer, too.
Good evening, Commissioners. Susan Ackerman. The question of whether the IRP comes first and this comes later is one we've talked with our consultants about, which is the E3 are helping us think through our systems and our processes and our modeling. And they are recommending that this has to be one-off and apart from the overall first IRP planning session. So it would not be melded into that, and it would not necessarily depend on the IRP because it's more operational, and you know the physical condition of the plant and what we're going to do with that is more operational. How it could get replaced in terms of our need for energy or capacity is something, if we got to that point, and I don't know that we will, but if we got to that point, that is the sort of thing that could be brought into an IRP in the next phase. Doesn't necessarily have to be in this first one.
Other comments before
I'll argue with Frank on that in our one-on-ones, but I appreciate your clarification and glad that it's all on the radar screen.
Other comments? Feedback?
Sonia? Until one-on-one, then.
Looks like an interesting set of one-on-ones you just queued up for yourself there, Frank.
I guess better change the schedule a little bit.
All right, we'll close out that item, and we just have a few things to bring us home here. Correspondence and board agendas. Frank, that's you.
Yeah, let me take just a second. There were two pieces of correspondence in your board packet. The first one, we spared you from hearing Julie Desimone and others talk about the upcoming financial audit. There were a couple of changes to GASB that were in the background, or those are things that would be new and different. Otherwise, really, this board has been through the drill before. For the most part, so it's all contained in the backgrounder, and they typically come in, I believe it's April, to report back on the year-end audit. So we saved a little bit of agenda time, thanks to a particular commissioner on that one or two. The other one was a report out, which is just a piece of follow-up from the international paper IP spill on the McKenzie from a meeting a year ago. I know there was some comments about monitoring. Those are things that we do plan on discussing when we do a review with the board of our source protection program. It was an opportunity to engage them. I think it was in the reply, by the way, to questions. I don't know if you had a chance to review that, but we do have... Oh, yeah, we do have, I was looking for you. We do have Carl available if there were further follow-up questions on that.
You didn't think this was going to get by me, did you?
I was looking at the clock going, this is way too early.
So if you don't mind.
No, go ahead.
Number one, I do really appreciate the majority of this, but, you know, I don't like the grill in the living room type of thing. You know, I've expressed my
concern about this organization and what my interpretation of their total disregard for the environment is, and this is a continuation. I've been monitoring this since the early 70s, and they've been dumping oil in there, and Kaiser Slough goes in above it, and I noticed that stormwater event, and you know, now they've agreed to tell us when they're dumping stormwater in above our intake. And you know, Kaiser Slough, I've measured the temperature over 70 degrees. That's their boiler water they dump in. But why are we even debating $24,000 for monitoring that water above our intake? Let's just monitor it. $24,000 to monitor the water. A Weyerhaeuser takes millions of gallons and dumps it back into the river out of their boilers every day right above our intake. And they have the capacity to dump their stormwater in there, and they've done it. They do it all the time, I suspect. But why don't we just start monitoring it? Yeah, I'm not going to wait for, you know, for them to pay that $12,000 or $20,000.
I would characterize this, and Carl can come up and hit me in the back of the head if I'm wrong. We do understand, and it's our plan to pursue the monitoring. It was an opportunity to get them to buy in and help with the process if the opportunity was there. But as part of our overall monitoring program, it's our intent to add monitoring to that location.
They've been sitting on it for 6 months. You went in July, and they haven't responded. That's in case something's happened. And they're just sitting on it. And, you know, they've got that much change in their vending machines in their break room. You know, $20,000 is nothing to IP. And I wish that they would just see to it. But I don't want to wait for their decision. I would hope that I could get support on the board to put a $20,000 monitoring system above our water intake where they dump a lot of water into the river.
I believe that's in our plan and our budget to do that.
Thank you. So. And when define
right.
timing,
is that
because
right? yeah, okay.
we've been waiting a long time. And, you know, I don't trust them as far as – I'm sorry, mm-hmm. I don't trust them. And I think they'll just say, oh, I'm sorry, and then pay the $20,000 fine, then dump another 1,000 gallons of oil in the river.
Yeah, I think this was an opportunity to try and engage them, but it's not something that deters us at all from just pushing ahead, and it is in the plan to do that.
So I don't need head nods or anything?
My understanding is we're doing it. We invited them to participate.
Right, but
we're doing it one way.
But we've been waiting since July
we're doing
for them
this.
To answer.
Yeah,
and
we don't need head nods for that.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate that, and I appreciate your
efforts.
Other
than Carl's head nod, and then hopefully I'll be back. Okay.
Carl, we'll get you the money, all right? Thank you. Thank you very much. Sorry to be so, you know, passionate about it, but that thing is a real sore spot with me. Thanks.
Oh, hold on just a second. Sonia, are we done with correspondence and board agendas?
So the board agenda, there was a couple things noteworthy. City council meeting, I just wanted to confirm with Ann. That's the 22nd, the work session. That
22nd.
Okay. That's for the bonding on the 27th, but the presentation, very similar to what you saw here around the base level reservoirs educational process, that'll be on the 22nd. There's also Eugene 350 and a presentation that I'm giving on February 5th. Which is the Wednesday after the board meeting next month, just about where we are with a lot of regional issues relative to resources and carbon, and just an opportunity to exchange and do some informational outreach to that group and associated groups around that. So that's on the calendar, and then just a number of upcoming events for the board as well.
I think Sonia had something to add to the IP discussion.
Yeah, sorry, I just wanted to ask. So, I mean, if other companies are located along the river start dumping water in there, I mean, have we gone in the past and offered to just do the monitoring? I mean, it seems like they should be held accountable for I mean, it's not something that we should always have to pay for, that should be burdened on the community. I mean, they should really be held responsible for paying for that funding. I appreciate that we're doing our due diligence to take care of the community, but it does irk me a bit that we're having to go and do this monitoring that they should pay for.
Dick, go ahead.
I am supportive and in agreement with the concerns expressed here. One question I had was whether or not, as a result of that incident, we were able to detect any contamination to the source water at our intakes, because I've forgotten that rather important detail.
The spill was actually downstream of the
intake.
Right,
yeah.
Well, the stormwater spill was above stream.
And the second comment I wanted to make was that I'm generally familiar with that facility, and I've lost my contemporary understanding as IP purchased the facility from Weyerhaeuser, but I do recall that that facility under Weyerhaeuser's operation had a very strong environmental component that was relatively transparent to us, and it seemed like at that time we had a good working relationship with Weyerhaeuser around any and all issues, and they were fairly proactive. I suspect that the discharges, not the one that was the subject of our concern here, but stormwater and boiler water, that they have discharge permits that if they were obligated to do monitoring would include monitoring components, and they may or may not, but I'm not sure, despite our concern and the need to be proactive, that we're in a different relationship with IP than we were when it was being run by Weyerhaeuser, and or that there are issues and or concerns of ours that aren't being attended to in our dialogue with those folks as we continue to do business. So I assume that we're continuing to operate in good faith, and that notwithstanding that if monitoring is needed, we're prepared to move forward with that, even if IP doesn't participate. But the bottom line is I'm not aware of any immediate or measured impact on water quality as a result, unless I'm mistaken, Carl.
No, that's correct, Commissioner Helgeson. I mean, we've been actively monitoring Kaiser Slough for a long, long time. And the other thing to think about is that we have multiple interactions with IP. We have not only, we have an emergency response kind of relationship with them. We're also building a wetland and treatment facility that is on the stormwater channel that we need access to IP's property. And then we got the homeless kind of land that we're trying to acquire or have MRT acquire. And then we got the relationship with the cogen. And what we've done, I think one of the bigger pieces to what we've done with them is now we've integrated them into our emergency response system, the watershed emergency response system. And so they have the ability now to actually notify us quickly when something happens. And it's not always their issues either. 42nd Street stormwater channel runs through there and they discharge into that, but there's a bunch of other stuff upstream of that that we're also concerned about. So, we're hoping to share the cost of that because last year we installed three other real-time monitoring stations, so it kind of tapped my budget out. And so, I was hoping maybe get them to pay for this one and then we would maintain it. So, Kaiser Slough is not a major water quality problem. It is one that we're concerned about and we're monitoring, but we'd like to get a real-time station there to give us early warning.
Well, it's not too late for them to change their mind, right? As a matter of fact, we haven't really heard from them on this particular issue.
In my experience with them, it takes them a while because they have to go back to wherever their home office is in Georgia and
Tennessee.
Yeah, well, I'll just weigh in. I, like everybody, I was appreciative of the backgrounder and glad that they, in many ways, are sort of more integrated into our systems going forward as a result of the event. So that's a positive outcome. But like other folks, we're disappointed that they, at least so far, have chosen not to respond to an opportunity to, build trust with not only this board and the EWEB, but the larger community. So I would hope that they would reconsider. But I understand it's their option. Yep.
We're planning on moving forward in 2020 with or without them. But yep. We thought we'd give them the opportunity to do the right thing first.
John, if you had a follow-up.
Here we go. So, Carl, thank you very much. I've been your greatest advocate since I've been here. But when I hear that you don't have a budget, I would very much like to be apprised whenever he runs out of budget because, our customer service surveys, four out of the top five things are the water quality, the most important thing to our customers. People can't live without water. They can live without electricity. And why this thing doesn't get fully funded, if he needs, my position is if he needs something that's critical to monitor, because I know what the 42nd Slough has in it and all that garbage, I would very much like to know about it. And so we could, if we need to have a funding source and a funding need, it's like running out of the septic tank money. It's just a non-starter for me. And I'll let the electricity go to the other people. I'm going to pound on the water thing, and I want to pound on the water quality. And I do not want to not do the best we can to protect that water for our citizens. So I am on that like I, you. You know, I don't want to get
I understand your
too
position.
Passionate, but I'm going to be there.
Well, I understand your position. I think that we have to look at this, and this is part of next month's review of the program. There is also diminishing return on investments, and the source protection is one piece of the entire barrier system. There's treatment, there's source protection, and there's multiple elements to it. I do think that there is a more or less effective way just to spend money, and sometimes it means taking money here and putting it there. I'm not sure that this is, like anything else, just unlimited funds. It is important. Customers do tell us it's important. But part of that is what we talked about earlier with water storage, water distribution. That's part of the system. And so while I appreciate your position, I think it has to be looked at in the context of the entire program.
No, I don't want to store dirty water. Sorry.
So.
Sounds like another interesting one-on-one lunch conversation.
You better plan a dinner for that one.
Okay. Mike Stoney had something to say. Go ahead.
So just a quick follow-up to my earlier comment. It sounds like we have no teeth to charge them. The state of Oregon or some other regulatory agency has the ability to charge them. But $24,000 to IP is not really anything to them. I mean, I don't know, maybe we should look at putting this at a legislative advocacy piece instead so that we can get more control or get some bigger portion of it so when polluters like this are on the riverfront, we can actually recoup some of those costs. Because this is another one of those places where, you know, we talk about equity across the board, and having us have to pay for some large company to dump into our water stream is not acceptable to me. So if we can talk to our legislative agencies, something around that, I mean, I don't think it's acceptable. I know it's only $24,000, but it's this is really not acceptable to me.
So I think we'll have another lunchtime conversation with you. I think there are laws and then there are enforcement of the laws. And so EWEB is not in a position to enforce the laws. There are other agencies that do that. That's where the fine came from. And it was redirected. One of the options was to redirect those funds to EWEB for some more proactive approach. But even going back through history, back to the early 70s, we can try to develop with IP a good working relationship. It's part response, it's part proactive. But EWEB itself is not the enforcement agency for river laws, and so. And actually the laws are relatively strong. It's a matter of how and when you enforce those. And monitoring is only a piece of what we do. There are other more proactive engagements that we're looking at relative to watershed protection that will provide the board more of an update on. I believe that is that February? That's next month?
March.
So a couple months from now. But. Okay.
All right, concluding comments.
I just quickly wanted to say, as much as we all love Carl, I don't think anybody should get a free pass on the budget rules. And that, and as much as I agree with Commissioner Brown that we should fund any and everything that Carl brings us, I think that we need to hold him and Frank accountable for managing the budget. And I would hate to give anybody a pass on that. The other thing I would say is that I think we've delegated authority to Frank and Carl and all of our supervisors to work within their budgets to shift funds around well within the ability to fund the $24,000 project. So having expressed our desire that we'd be proactive about this, I'm sure they're in a position with the tools they need to follow that directive, and we don't need to abrogate our rules about budget compliance in order to accomplish that.
We are.
All right, for the good of the order, we'll move into board wrap-up. If you have comments that are useful for everybody to hear, we can take those now. John Brown, if you have.
I apologize to the board and to the group for being so passionate, but water is why I'm here, and I've got a long history with that. And so I just want to know that, Carl, I respect everything you do, and Rod and everything else. It's not against you or anything else. It's I because. Trust me, I'm going to amend your budget. You watch. So we're going from there. Thank you very much.
Sonia, go ahead.
I don't want to talk too much. I'll just say thank you for listening to me tonight and letting me vent a little bit. I'm just frustrated by that, and I know it's not anybody in here. It's just the process. So thank you,
Mr. Helgeson.
I've had plenty of opportunity tonight. Thank you,
Mindy.
Nothing from me.
Nothing from me either. Frank, last word from you.
It looks like I need to change my schedule around a little bit for some of these more lengthy conversations. But there, you know, the board is collectively and individually very useful to us relative to guidance. And you are absolutely correct. The number one thing that customers tell us is drinking water quality and the reliability of its delivery. And so that even gets slightly higher rankings than electric reliability. Sorry to the electric people, but both are incredibly important, so we appreciate that.
All righty, we are adjourned.